Hallo, schön, dass du da bist, hier beim Podcast Happy, Holy and Confident, dein Podcast fürs Herz und den Verstand. Mein Name ist Laura Marlina Seiler und ich freue mich unendlich, dass du da bist, dass du diesen Podcast gefunden hast. Vielleicht gehörst du zu den Menschen, die diesen Podcast schon ganz, ganz, ganz lange hören. Vielleicht gehörst du aber auch zu den Menschen, die ganz neu hier im Podcast sind. Und falls du zu den Menschen gehörst, die schon ganz lange diesen Podcast hören, möchte ich dir einfach Danke sagen. Danke, dass du da bist. Danke, dass du diesen Podcast unterstützt, dass du ihn teilst, dass du dich, dein Leben dadurch vielleicht aus einer anderen Perspektive siehst, dass du mehr Liebe in dein Leben dadurch bringst. Und dafür einfach Dankeschön. Und falls du ganz neu hier in diesem Podcast bist, möchte ich dir einfach willkommen sagen. Es ist so schön, dass du da bist. Ich freue mich riesig, dass du den Podcast gefunden hast. Und ich stelle mich einmal ganz kurz vor, damit du weißt, mit wem du es hier zu tun hast. Ich bin Laura und ich bin Mama von einem 18 Monate alten, wundervollen Sohn, Carlo. Bin mit Paul zusammen. Wir leben gerade auf Hawaii und ich nehme hier auch gerade diese Folge auf. Das heißt, falls du irgendwo einen Hahn im Hintergrund hörst oder so, die leben in unserem Garten. Und ich bin Autorin von den beiden Büchern Mögest du glücklich sein und dem Nummer 1 Spiegel-Bestseller Schön, dass es dich gibt. Ich bin die Gründerin der Rise Up in Shine Uni, was ein tief transformierendes Coaching-Programm ist, bei dem mittlerweile über 25.000 Menschen teilgenommen haben. Ich bin die Editorin in Chief, wie man so schön sagt, von dem I Am Magazin und mache ganz viele andere tolle Sachen. Bin entweder auf Hawaii, irgendwo anders in der Welt oder in Berlin. Und meine Vision ist es, mit diesem Podcast und mit meiner gesamten Arbeit dazu beizutragen, das Bewusstsein auf dieser Welt zu verändern, von Angst hin zu mehr Liebe, mehr Vertrauen, mehr Schöpferkraft, weil ich einfach glaube, dass die Lösung für die meisten unserer Probleme ist. Und deswegen freue ich mich umso mehr, dass du hier bist, heute bei dieser Podcast-Folge mit einem ganz wundervollen Gast, den ich in L.A. getroffen habe und über ein paar Ecken wurde mir empfohlen, Laura, du musst unbedingt, unbedingt, unbedingt in Q interviewen. Und ich kannte ihn noch gar nicht und habe ihn dann in L.A. kennengelernt. Und in Q, der mit normalem Namen Adam Schmalholz heißt, lebt in L.A. und ist Poetry Slammer, also er ist Poet. Und er ist ein Multi-Platinum-Songwriter. Er hat unter anderem für Selena Gomez Lieder geschrieben und für ganz viele andere große, große Musiker und er ist ein fantastischer Mensch und ich habe ihn getroffen und wir haben über ganz viele unterschiedliche Themen gesprochen, aber vor allen Dingen auch darüber, wie er es schafft, seine Kunst fließen zu lassen und sich selber nicht dabei zu blockieren. Und in Q ist ein so tiefsinniger Mensch und es ist bei weitem wirklich eines meiner absoluten Lieblingsinterviews, das ich mir selber auch immer wieder anhöre, weil ich es einfach so inspirierend finde. Ich habe mit Adam unter anderem darüber gesprochen, warum gerade die Leere manchmal für uns so wichtig ist, um Fülle zu finden und dass dieser Raum des Nichts eigentlich der Raum aller Möglichkeiten ist. Und ich habe mit ihm darüber gesprochen, wie wir in Kunst, in unserer eigenen Kunst auch Heilung finden können und Liebe finden können. Und Adam hat vor allen Dingen auch zu seiner Beziehung über seinen Vater gesprochen, wie er ihm vergeben hat und wie er das auch in seiner Kunst verarbeitet hat. Wir sprechen darüber, wie wir unsere innere Welt zum Ausdruck bringen können und was eine Möglichkeit ist, Spiritualität zu sehen und zu leben und wie dir deine innere Stimme dabei hilft, die beste Version von dir selbst zu leben. Und dieses Interview ist so wunderschön und er liest mehrere von seinen Gedichten vor, die, also bei dem Interview, Lars war dabei, Amelie war dabei, Farina war dabei, ich war logischerweise dabei und wir alle hatten, glaube ich, mindestens 4 bis 5 Mal Tränen in den Augen, weil wir so berührt waren von den Gedichten und von den Dingen, über die Adam spricht. Also bitte hör dir dieses Interview an, genieß es, trink dazu einen Tee, mach's dir gemütlich und genieß die Gedichte und einfach die Poesie von Adam beziehungsweise von InQ. Ich wünsche dir unglaublich viel Spaß bei dieser Folge und habe noch eine Info, und zwar heute am Mittwoch, den 22. April, passiert etwas ganz, ganz Tolles, und zwar erscheint die dritte Ausgabe von meinem Magazin I Am. Und dieses Magazin ist eins meiner absoluten Herzensprojekte. Ich bin so dankbar, dass es das gibt und dass es so viele Menschen lesen und lieben, und das Feedback ist unfassbar schön. Und in dieser neuen Ausgabe geht es darum, unsere eigene Macht zu nutzen und keine Angst vor unserer Macht zu haben, denn wenn du die Welt verändern möchtest, dann musst du deine Macht akzeptieren, denn ohne Macht kannst du nichts verändern. Und Macht ist überhaupt nichts Schlimmes. Macht ist immer das, was du damit machst. Und genau darum geht es in der neuen Ausgabe von I Am, wie wir unsere eigene Macht erkennen und nutzen können. Und du kannst dir das Magazin überall bestellen. Du findest es in jedem Laden, wo es Magazine gibt. Du kannst dir ein Abo bestellen. Den Link findest du einfach auch hier in den Shownotes. Einfach, ich glaube, www.im-magazin.de und auf meiner Webseite. Aber genau, auf jeden Fall in den Shownotes. Und ich wünsche dir ganz viel Freude bei dem neuen Magazin. Ich hoffe, dass es dir genauso gut gefällt wie die anderen auch. Und ein letztes Zitat von InQ, bevor es jetzt hier losgeht. Er hat gesagt, wir müssen imstande sein, uns im Spiegel anzuschauen, unsere Vergangenheit anzuschauen und davon empowered zu sein, ganz egal, was passiert ist. In diesem Sinne, ich wünsche dir unglaublich viel Freude mit dem Interview mit InQ. I am so excited to talk to you today, InQ. It's a pleasure being here and that you made up the time for us that I can talk to you. So welcome to the podcast. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me. It's my pleasure.
And you are a national champion of Poetry Slam. You are an award-winning poet. You are a multi-platinum songwriter. Mm-hmm. So you are like living words and language, embodied living words and language. And I just came from an interview with Lewis House, who's also a really good friend of yours.
Who I absolutely love, yeah.
He loves you too, he told me to tell you. So he said, okay, when you meet InQ, ask him to start the interview with poet number 85. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to say that, and whatever happens now, I'm just going to listen.
Okay, cool. So it's actually very apropos because it's Valentine's Day, which is like, you know, the big day of love.
Yeah.
It's a made up day of love,
okay. But
it's still a day of love. So this poem is about love. And I actually wrote it because I used to live in this little back house, and the woman that owned the main house, her mom moved in at a certain point, and she was in her 80s, and her name's Dolores. And her and I shared a kitchen. And so we would go and we would eat and we would have coffee together, and we would talk about life and love. And I came to really, really care about her. And about 6 months after she was there, I woke up one night and it was like 3 a.m. And I had this like big window, and through the blinds, I could see the ambulance lights, and she was getting taken away on a stretcher. And I watched her, you know, and she was still alive, but she was having like major health complications. And I went and I visited her in the hospital, and she had tubes in and out of her system, and she had a really high fever, and she didn't recognize me, you know. So I sat with her for like an hour, and the doctors were saying that it wasn't good. So I pretty much like said my goodbyes to her because I didn't want her to suffer anymore. But of course, Dolores was not done fighting, and she ended up getting better. And when she got better enough, they moved her to a retirement community. And I went and I visited her in the retirement community after about a month of her being there. And we were outside in like the garden area, and she was in a good mood. And so I like leaned in and I was like, why are you in such a good mood, Dolores? You know, you seem really happy. And she goes like this. She goes, I met a guy. So she had met a guy after she moved into the retirement community.
Wow.
And they had started dating.
It's so beautiful.
Like just doing these little dates. And so why I thought it was so touching and moving and beautiful was because here I thought that her life was over. And not only did she get better, But she actually got to be excited about something again mm-hmm. and surprised by something again in her 80s. Mm-hmm. And it made me think, you know, it doesn't matter what age you are. If you're not willing to be excited or surprised by life, you're not really living. And so we have to be open to what could be around the next corner, which could be a miracle. It could even be love, you know. So this piece is called 85. I want to fall in love at 85. Go on shuffleboard dates. And dance to hip hop from 95. We would also listen to the song Staying Alive, but only for the message. Otherwise, we'd keep away from disco. It's depressing. We'd rock matching tracksuits and rope gold chains. We'd look like Run DMC, but in their old age. We'd take aerobics classes and wear bifocal glasses and eat at IHOP and hold hands at Sunday masses. And when it comes to the bedroom, well, nothing much would happen in the bedroom because we're 85. But we would still be down to take a walk or take a drive or sit and talk and have a drink, watch the passersby, ask each other why or how or who or where or when. And then we'd laugh and cry again about the people we had been. And I would touch her withered skin and comment on how thin it is to keep in something infinite. And she would smile sweet and blush, then tell me that I think too much. She's right, I think too much. It's always been a problem. But then again, that's how I made my green like the goblin. When I was in my 20s, I was eating top ramen, counting up my pennies, saving up to go food shopping. But now I'm 85, and somehow I feel more alive. I turn my hearing aid up and bump Jurassic 5. I read the sports page while she peruses classifieds. We like antique stores, garage sales, and barter buys. And when it comes to the bedroom, well, hopefully, every once in a while, she lets me knock her boots into the floral patterns of our bedpost, then hold her head close like death isn't chasing us, planning on erasing us and replacing us with better versions of us, reshaping us, remaking us, then recreating us with new identities so we can make new memories. Hush, little baby, learn to walk and talk and think and lie and feel and fight and love and die and never get the answers why. She dips a joint of grass and wheatgrass and we get, huh? Her hair is silver as the moon in the Miami sky. We still pop pills, but it's not the Molly anymore. Whenever we can't sleep, we listen to the ocean floor. She got a sound of the CCD for me from the Brookstone store. And ever since, I've been snoring like a really good metaphor for snoring. Sorry, I go blank sometimes. What? I'm 85. I'm not complaining. I'm just happy that I'm still alive and happy that I have my better half by my side. Superfly, she doesn't look a day over 75. When I first saw her, I was totally in awe. She was classical. So I was like, yo, yo, ma. And that was all it took. A single look and I was shook. I fell for it like some loose shingles from our Spanish roof. And I'm a lover till she loses every last root and has to glue dentures to her gums to chew solid food. Ooh. Now that's real love, dude. That's some push comes to shove love. Not when it's convenient love. Hospital bed love. Feed her ice chips, love. Never leave the room, love. Sleeping in the chair, love. Pray to up above, love. Have to pull the plug, love. Miss her in my bones, love. everything about her love. Die within a month, love. Can't live without her love. Love. The only reason that we are alive. And none of us should have to wait until we're 85.
Wow. That's beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing. It goes deep.
What did it make you feel or think?
Well, I think I went through so many different emotions. Mm. Like, the beauty of being so alive when you're old, and that the age is just a number, and that it's actually about something, what you make out of it, and and the depth of love that he's feeling for her. I think this is really beautiful. And I was just thinking that it's sad that it's that you don't see it so often. But I was also thinking that I love those moments. Maybe you know it when you see like an old couple walking and they hold hands.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
And this always touches me so much. I think it's just so, you could just tell like these two really made it happen. This has such a power.
It is rare. I mean, you know, it's an interesting thing to discuss on Valentine's Day, but like, you know, at least in America, 45% or 50, I think it's 55% of first marriages end in divorce. Mm-hmm. And then out of the 45% that are left, if you really like talk to them and ask, is this satisfying for you? Not happy, because happy's an illusion. You're never going to be consistently happy all the time. But is it like satisfying to you, or would you do this again? I mean, a lot of them stay together for kids, or they stay together for, you know, their friends. They don't want to be seen as, you know, making the wrong decisions, or religion, or money, or any of the reasons. And whatever that last percentage is, 10%, 15%, anytime I meet somebody who's there, I turn into an interviewer, because I want to know what is their secret and what is their experience. Because, you know, for me, that's what I want to create in the relationship that I'm in. And I've been in a relationship for 2 years. So when I wrote that poem, it was a manifestation. But I ended up stepping into something that really, truly feels amazing in every way.
So would you say that the poems you write always have like also a message for yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. They're either me purging or praying or both. Mm-hmm. And I'm always talking to myself. You know, I was saying this to you before we started. I think we teach what we need to learn. And so, you know, these are reminders to myself to try to strive to be a better version of who I am on a daily basis. And then I get to share those with other people, and hopefully that mirrors their own humanity and mine, you know, so that they feel a little bit less alone and they see themselves in my experience. And hopefully it inspires them to do the same. But I don't really control anyone else's reaction to my art. I think that's like pretentious, you know. So however anyone wants to experience it, and whatever they need to take is what they need to take. But for me, it's always a reminder to try to live my best life.
Do you remember the first poem you wrote?
You know, I started out rapping.
Oh, okay.
So when I was like 13 years old, you know, I just fell in love with hip hop, and freestyling was, I think, my first form of meditation. I'm an avid meditator. I've meditated twice a day for over 4 years. It's been like a non-negotiable practice in my life. But I would say freestyling was almost the first version of that, because when you're freestyling, you can't think about anything else but the next word or the next rhyme. So it puts you into the moment like nothing else can. And so I think that provided me with a sense of freedom, and allowed me to, I guess, express the things that were suppressed. At that time in my life, I had a lot of stuff that was going on that I didn't really have an outlet for. And hip hop was that first outlet. And then when I was 19, I wound up in an open mic for poets in Los Angeles called the Poetry Lounge. And I started doing my rapping a cappella. and people just responded. And it was the first time I ever saw a community respond to vulnerability in the way of like almost like a celebration. Like the way it was in a battle rap, if you said like a punchline, everybody'd be like, oh, well, if you got on stage and you said something true or real, meaningful, vulnerable, people would be like, oh, you know, they'd snap and clap and, you know, you'd hear their voices. And 350 people came to this place every single Tuesday night. And I was hooked and I loved the community. And I just went back every single week. And eventually one day I woke up and realized I was more of a poet than an MC.
Wow. And then, like, have you been working in between as something, someone else? Or, like, did you had a, let's say, normal job? Right. And by the side, you did hip hop and writing poems and doing poetry slam? Or was it clear for you, I'm a poet, I'm going to live from that? Like, or was there a sort of a transition in between?
Yeah, I mean, I'm 41, so I wish I could say it was like a clear path, but it definitely wasn't. But I learned so much along the way. So I definitely had a normal job for whatever that really means.
Yeah, I was just thinking, but we both know what I mean.
And I also know, you know, everything is an illusion really in the end, and normal is
not
certainly
normal.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I definitely had a job where I had to show up on someone else's time. Mm-hmm. You know, they said, you get here and now. I said, okay, you know. And then when I was like 26, I decided to go full time. And I couldn't figure out how to monetize my poetry for a really long time. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, I ended up getting into songwriting. And that allowed me to have a financial foundation. And then I very consciously got back into poetry because I think it's a beautiful art form. Some of the best experiences of art that I've ever had were being in the audience watching another poet on stage. So I wanted to try to continue to explore my own work and, you know, reach as many people as I could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's beautiful. And when you started to write poems, mm-hmm. Did it come naturally to you? Was it always something that was happening in your own life where you went, okay, I have to channel that somehow and make art from it? Or because I think it's just really interesting to go in the process of being creative and letting your art flow without being afraid of being judged or so how did you start? Like, how did you know how to write a poem?
Well, I think people overcomplicate art. And you know, there's no way for someone to truly teach you what your voice is. They can teach you like techniques of art, but no one can teach you what your voice is. And oftentimes when they're teaching you techniques of art, they tend to co-opt your voice as well, you know, because they put their judgments on your voice. Your voice is yours and you'll develop it the more you use it. It's like any other muscle, you know? Yeah. So for me, I always now, but even then, just started in a place that was real. And I don't strategize my inspiration. You know, I don't think like what's going on in the world, I'll write something about that. Or what's a subject that everybody connects to, I'll write something about that. Because that's fucking boring to me, you know, to think about what would work and then try to go after that. Instead, I just pay attention to what either inspires me or moves me or annoys me, you know, and then I start there. And that's kind of the breadcrumb trail, you know, that you can just follow. Because if I write something down, you know, I thought of this line the other day, the birds don't sing to win a Grammy. You know, they're not trying to go platinum. And I just had that thought. And I was in a conversation with someone and I said it out loud and then I stopped and I wrote it down. And that will become a poem, you know, because when I go back to it, it's already something that is charged for me. So I don't have to sit down and go, all right, what am I going to make that's great today? That's, you can't think that way. It'll stop you from exploring. You know, art is supposed to be about play. It's supposed to be about freedom. And we let our ideas of ourselves get in the way. or other people's real or imaginary ideas of us get in the way of us exploring. So
that's beautiful. Thanks. So what you do, if I understand it correctly, you just go through life, and whenever something inspires you, moves you, you either like make a note, and mm-hmm. then later on you write on it, but you really keep being true to yourself in the process.
And exactly.
How did you get out of your own judgment?
I mean, I'm still in my own judgment. Mm-hmm. Everyone is. Yeah. It's not, you know, they say, oh, remove your ego. You can't. It's impossible.
Yeah.
Your ego is your humanity. It's a part of living in this illusion of separation, which is real to us, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, both of our identities are very real. What we want to create and accomplish in the world are very real. You know, the problems in the world are very real in the physical world. Mm-hmm. And then there's the spiritual world, you know? So there's no way that I will stop judging myself or stop judging other people's real or imaginary judgments of me, you know? But okay, I won't remove my ego, but I don't have to like navigate from my ego. I don't have to operate from it. Mm-hmm. And it's removing layers more and more so that I can get to the place where when I take action, it's not about just my little, you know, world, my little, you know, dream, my little ego. It's just, you know, I don't want to live that way. And I certainly don't want to create that way, because I think that would get in the way of actually what the poem wants to communicate. And in the end, I think the art is more important than the artist is. So.
Oh, I think this is an important point. Yeah. So would you say that you create from a place of your heart, your soul, your higher self? Or where would you say, in which inner state do you go when you create? Like, what do you connect to in yourself?
So I definitely think I am the vehicle and the obstacle to my poems. You know, so when I'm sitting down, I'm definitely starting in the place that's true. And then I have to tell this story or express whatever these concepts are through my experience and through my thoughts and through my feelings. But I also can get in the way of communicating what wants to be said. Mm-hmm. And once again, I think I'm then walking that razor's edge in the creation moment between the physical world and the spiritual world. And then sharing is a whole nother thing, because when I share it, of course I want to be validated. Of course I want you guys to like it. Of course I want people to buy my book. You know, there are things that I of course want in the world, but me wanting those things can get in the way of me actually communicating what it is that I wrote, the truth of what was there in that moment. And so it's finding a way to do both things simultaneously that I think allows the best connection to the people that are listening.
Thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
The podcast is very much about healing, growing, mm-hmm. finding yourself, being true to yourself. And I have one question. What was the most difficult thing for yourself to heal mm-hmm. in yourself?
So I have a piece in the book about my father. It's called Father Time. Mm-hmm. I'm happy to share it with you. And I think that this piece ultimately is about forgiveness. Mm-hmm. I don't think that I would say that it's the most difficult thing. I don't think anything is the most difficult thing. I wouldn't rate it in that way. But what I would say is this was a very impactful experience, you know, that I had in my life. And if I hadn't have gone through it the way that I went through it, I wouldn't be who I am. And so, you know, a lot of what this poem is about is coming to terms with taking pain and alchemizing it, you know, and realizing that whatever it is that you went through, You know, even if the circumstances are unfathomable and you can't make sense of them, you ultimately have a choice after you go through the grieving stages, which is, do you want to be a victim to it or do you want to be empowered in your life? And to find a way to be grateful for it, because it made you who you are.
So in what have you alchemized it? The pain.
Yeah, I think the pain, you know, has been. I mean, I feel at peace with this subject.
So you would say you alchemized pain into peace?
Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah. So this is called Father Time. I'm staring at the number wondering if I should call. I can hear the tick-tock from the clock on the wall as it meshes with the thump-thump beat of my heart. Sometimes getting something started is the hardest part. I didn't meet my dad until I was 15. I'd seen his photograph, but his image was sickening. A coward with a dick, but no balls to back it up. See, when he left me as a kid, I had cause for acting up. The funny thing about hate is the person you hate doesn't feel that hate. You feel that hate. But wait, the weight can be too much for a person to take, and personally, I was hurt, so I just locked it away. I was angry all the time, and I didn't know why. I couldn't handle my own rage, so I would hide it inside, pretending everything was fine became a daily pastime. Time passed, and I started to believe in my own lies. I took it out on my mom because she raised me alone. The rage I couldn't own had left me totally numb. It was like landmines in my mind that I didn't understand. So when the boy inside cried, the young man outside yelled. I think I learned about my masculinity from TV. The people weren't real, so I knew they couldn't leave. I'd sit there for hours right in front of the tube. The images that I saw were my depiction of truth. It was manhood in a box, and I bought into it. The censorship of anything inside of me that's sensitive. The sentence is a lifetime of tears suppressed in a stone face, an overblown ego they've distracted through a paper chase. Back when I was 9, I imagined in my mind that my father was a spy working for the FBI, and that's why he couldn't stop by, write, or drop a line. He was off saving our lives from the bad guys. But that was just a lie that I used to get by so that you wouldn't see the tears welling up in my eyes. When you're rejected by the person that you're created by, you secretly feel like you don't have a right to your life. I thought if I confronted him, then it would make it all right. But since I couldn't forgive him, it just recycled my spite. I remember meeting him for the first time. Every time a person passed by, I would ask, "Mom, is that him? I look a little like him, right? No? Oh. Well, what about that guy?" And that was what it was like to meet the man that gave me life. To shake his hand and look into his eyes. We talked till he apologized, then said our goodbyes. I walked away on my own and I began to cry. Now, for years after that, I acted like it was all resolved. I told him what I thought, so I figured problem solved, but it just re-evolved. My insecurities were eating at my mental health. I took it out on the world because I hated myself. That's when I finally decided I needed some help. I opened up. I started writing about my past. I got honest with myself and I started chipping at my mask. I looked into the mirror and confronted what I saw. accepting the reflection by embracing every flaw, then directing the connection into breaking down the walls by reflecting the perfection of the God inside us all. I stopped focusing on everything that I had been hateful for and started focusing on everything I could be grateful for. And personally, there is a lot I can be thankful for. If pain is dragging you down, just cut the ankle cord. It's when the weight lifted and I really started living. It's when my hate shifted and I really started giving. It's when my fate twisted. It was like an ego exorcism. Your mind state can be the most powerful of prisons. My father never played catch with me or gave advice. But if nothing else, that man gave me my life. And that's enough for me. If that is all he could ever give. Because I'm appreciative for every day I get to live. And even though I don't need my dad to validate me, I thought that I should write this poem to thank him for creating me. Because every moment we are alive is like a gift. And if that's not enough to forgive, then what is? I'm staring at the number, wondering if I should call. I can hear the tick-tock from the clock on the wall as it meshes with the thump-thump beat of my heart. Sometimes getting something started is the hardest part. I pick the phone up. The dial tone begins to sing. I punch his number into it and it begins to ring. 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 Hello, Mike. Hey, man, it's Adam, your son.
Wow, thank you for sharing.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for listening.
What I love about this is that I feel that many people have, like, the biggest pain comes from wanting to change what was.
Yeah, that's right. Well said.
And that they just live a copy of their past because right. They don't let go what was.
Right.
And they still try to change it, but yeah. They can't.
That's right.
And I think it is just so beautiful because in this poem, you just take us through the journey I think everyone needs to go through to be free. Mm. Because it's the only way. How what you said in the beginning, how to alchemize pain into peace.
Yeah.
So
I mean, it's definitely my, I mean, the whole book really, it's just it. This is my roadmap to being here, you know, to being present with you right now. And I'm certainly still a work in progress. I'm not a product or anything like that. But I feel much more in the world than I've ever been. I feel much more in reality, not in my projection of reality, as you were talking about. And people do, you know, I can attest to it because I went through it for a long time. I just recreated the same lesson in different disguise, basically, like over and over again. And if you blame other people, you know, if you victimize yourself, if you get angry at God, you know, like getting angry at God is like yelling at yourself in the mirror, because no matter what you say, God will be waiting for you when you are done. You know, and if you do any of that stuff, if you have behaviors that wind up exacerbating it, you just kick the can down the road and you're going to have to deal with it later. And it gets deeper and deeper, you know, and farther from healing. And so, you know, the more that you put it off, the harder it gets, but it's still worth it. You know, we have to be able to look at ourselves in the mirror, look at our past, and be empowered by it, no matter what happened. You know, and people had a lot worse than me, so I can't even imagine some of the pain that people have gone through. But what I can say is, if you're not willing to really, truly embrace that pain so that you can integrate that pain into your life and be grateful for it because it made you who you are, you won't be able to move on and truly be in the world.
How did your inner world change after you forgave? Like, what would you say? How's, if you could give your inner world a color, how was it before you forgave and how is it now?
You know, I would go through cycles of depression. Mm-hmm. You know, and by the way, I'll say one more thing. You know, it's not like when I wrote the poem, everything was amazing. Once again, that poem was a manifestation for me. It was a moment of clarity that I had to learn how to apply. You know, it wasn't as simple as the poem makes it out to be, but the poem was the higher truth. And then I had to live into that. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the color would be necessarily.
Let's take a word. Maybe that's easier for you.
I definitely would go through almost like, and I had substance things too, you know, so, and behaviors that were not at all healthy. So I would say I would go through cycles of like, you know, happiness and feeling like I was on top of the world and then being really depressed for kind of long periods of time. And, you know, it's become less and less. And when I get dark now, I'm not really like afraid of my pain. You know, Americans, but really the whole entire world, I mean, we're afraid of pain. Yeah. You know, and so we push it down. And, you know, it'll come out one way or the other. It'll come out whether you're in traffic or it'll become a disease or really. We have to feel through our pain so that we can truly like allow it to move through us. Because pain, what is it? It's just energy. Yeah. And if you trap energy, it takes effort to trap energy, to not feel things, you know? Yeah. But if you kind of open up and allow it to kind of wash through you, you realize you can actually, because energy never goes anywhere, you can transform it into something else. So.
Yeah, that's true. So, how's your relationship with your father today?
So my father passed away. I wouldn't say that we were on great terms before he left this world, but I was at peace. And I think we got to spend some time together in a way where I got to know him a little bit. And that was really all that I needed, was to be able to know where half of me had come from and to be able to say what I needed to say and to look him in the eyes and be present.
It's amazing. You said that you meditate twice a day.
Yes.
So in the morning, in the evening?
Yeah, morning and late afternoon or evening, okay. Yeah.
Do you have a certain meditation practice or you just sit down and be present? How do you meditate? What's your take?
So I started literally when I was in Joshua Tree. It was right after my father had passed away, actually. And I was much more affected by it than I thought I would be. Mm-hmm. I was kind of surprised at how affected I was. And I was like in these, you know, giant boulder valleys. And so I just sat on this huge rock in the sun and I just closed my eyes. And I had a realization actually, because I had tried to meditate many times in the past and I wasn't really able to connect to it. And the realization I had is that meditation is basically like a gym for letting go.
I love that.
And that all you're doing is practicing, building your muscle of letting go of your thoughts and your emotions so you can return to the moment and truly be present to what's actually happening. Not to your, as your point was, story from the past that you're bringing into a new moment. You know, there's a line in the book, we will always find the evidence for what we choose to believe. And so it's changing our beliefs because then we can find new evidence right? So I was sitting there and I was like, wow, this is what meditation is. And then I went and sought out a teacher named Emily Fletcher, who taught me her technique, which is the Ziva meditation technique, but it's really from Vedic, which I know that you know is its own kind of brand of meditation, which is funny that meditations have brands, but whatever gets it out into the world, you know? Yes. And it's been a non-negotiable practice for me and an absolute game changer. You meditate as well?
Yeah.
What's your practice?
Well, I have many different kinds of meditation. It depends on how I think what I have in my mind. I can use like different meditations, what I use right now, what I need right now. So what I usually do, it's like I go into meditation, I check in with myself, I send like a compassionate smile into my inner world, and I say like, hello, I'm there. And
hello, I'm there.
Yeah, because usually you're not connected to yourself, right? You're everywhere, but you're not with yourself.
Yeah,
so I close my eyes and I check in with myself and I say, hi, sorry for not being there, I'm back. And then I just focus on my breath, on my heart to really become present. I send like roots to the center of the earth to connect to the earth, I connect to the cosmos, and then I feel like aligned. And then from there I do my gratitude practice, and then I love to visualize, so I really take a lot of time to daydream and to visualize what I want to create, and I just see my future. I just see everything I'm going to do, and I spend a lot of time there. And then I usually also take some time to look at what do I have to forgive, like what is there that needs to be healed. And usually then comes the point where I go like to my inner child and I meet like the little Laura, and I just spend time with her and hug her, laugh her, be with her, ask her what do you need today. And and then at the end of the meditation I always just ask, how can I serve today? And then I usually start.
I love that.
So it's like my own mixture of the tools
of what's best for you right now. That's fantastic.
So this is what I usually do, and I just, since I do it since a few years, it just really is inside of myself, and I just go through it, and sometimes I just change like the,
of course,
but yeah, these are the parts that are important for me. And sometimes I just try to just be present when I know that I'm very not present. And then it's the most difficult time to just be like with my breath.
You know, when you were talking, it reminded me when you were talking about the roots and then moving up.
Yeah.
So the reason why we made this is because, you know, the tree mirrors, the branches mirror the roots, you know, and then if you turn it to the side, it's, you know, like lungs or like the brain.
Yeah, true.
So it's like the two hemispheres, but then it's also like the lungs. And the two parts in the book are inhale and exhale, you know, so it's very simple. But the concept of what this book is really like in many ways what you were kind of discussing right now, which is that we're always just, I mean, this modern life that we're living, It's amazing. Technology is amazing. I mean, you know, who knows where this is going to go? You know, what you've created, how you continue to put all of these conversations that are inspiring for you first and for your guests first out into the world. And then people think things and feel things and take actions in their life. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And technology has made the world so much smaller, but it's also really isolated people. And consumerism in general always wants to take from you. It wants to take your money. It wants to take your time. It wants to take your information. It wants to take your likes. It wants to take your love. So everything is trying to take from us constantly. And it is very hard to like settle down and hear that internal voice, you know? And so, you know, if I don't know something, what do? I'm like trained to go ask Google or like talk to a coach or even read a book or a podcast or anything. And all of these tools are amazing, but there is a difference between using tools and having those tools use you. And I think that's what's happening these days is everybody's tools are using them. It, you know, so I would encourage anybody who's listening if you have something that you're going through, you know, instead of looking outward first, just find silence and just be by yourself and, you know, wait, give that space until that voice comes up, because that voice is the true north. That's the compass. That's the thing that's going to allow you to follow your purpose and your passion and your enthusiasm. And, you know, a friend of mine used to say this, only you will know, you know, truly. And so it's not about like, what should I do? It's about waiting until you can hear what that inner voice is telling you to do. And I mean, this book has actually been my window into that, you know, because poetry has been my window into that moment of hearing my own voice. So if anything, what I hope that people get from the book is to inquire within, you know, inquire within maybe the pages of the book that I had to inquire within to write all these poems, but that ultimately the answers lie within the people who are reading it. And I hope this is a springboard for them to listen to their own voice more.
There's something really important you said, and I would just like to highlight that, because I think that we are so trained to be afraid of emptiness.
Exactly.
Because we always think we have to be somehow entertained or full, or we always try to fill up emptiness.
Right.
Because we are so afraid of it.
Right.
And paradox, how do you say it in English?
Yeah, like, paradoxically.
Paradoxically.
Yeah.
In this emptiness is everything. So I just want to encourage everyone who's listening, because I just found this really inspiring, that you find in the emptiness, you only find in the emptiness actually what you need to hear.
Yeah. It's almost like walking into a house that has so much art that you can't see any of the art. You know, there's too much art, so you don't see any of the art. It's just like overwhelming, you know? It's like, well, our inner world is like that. You know, we can't see anything. There's too many things on the wall, you know? And so it's only when you find that emptiness that you will be surprised at what comes up. Because infinite possibility can only come out of emptiness. What can come up if there's no space? Nothing, you know? So, I mean, even the meditation has been such a great process. Writing has been such a great process. But you know what I've been doing lately? I've been fucking sitting alone without my phone or any screens and just thinking. Like, what a revolutionary idea. It's so ridiculous that in like modern life, like just sitting alone thinking and just waiting, as you're saying, to see what comes up. It's not like I even have something specific on my mind often. I just like sit for a half an hour and just see what happens, you know? And I think there's almost like a rejuvenation process. It's almost like putting my computer to sleep or something. I don't even know what the right analogy is, but like what you said is dead on, and finding other ways to do that. You know, people think you have to be with other people to feel less alone. You know, you go into nature, you could feel less alone in nature. Just, you can be literally with nature.
You are.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So, yeah.
Thank you. I feel that there are a lot of different, what would be the right word? Well, many people have many different views on spirituality. So something, it's like, I don't even know what all the different things are people think about spirituality. But I have the wish to bring like light into all this thoughts about spirituality. So what is spirituality to you?
It's a great question. What is spirituality to me? I think it's just trying to maintain the awareness of those two worlds that we talked about earlier, the physical world and the spiritual world. And it's certainly a difficult task, because I fall asleep and then I wake up, and I fall asleep and then I wake up. But it's like, row, row, row your boat gently downstream. Merrily, 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 merrily. Life is but a dream, you know? And if this is all a dream, which it is, you know? And I don't know that to be true, but I know that to be true. If you even just look at everything around us, it's mostly empty space. Every single thing, you know? It's like 99 point whatever, empty space, the whole entire universe. You know, and if we got small enough, you would just go right through me. We're just a bunch of vibrating energy, basically. And so when you know that, when you change your frequency, you will change what you're attracted to and what you're attracting. And, you know, that's why it's like, people want to change other people. Just change yourself. You know, just focus all your energy on being the best version of yourself. And oftentimes the problems will
disappear.
Exactly.
It's beautiful. I love that.
So you told me you have a poem about spirituality.
I have a poem that's about me. Yeah, sure.
Would you share it?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. There is nothing in life that you cannot breathe through except death. And since we're all alive, it means at least there's one breath left. So pull it deep into your chest, into your bones, into your breasts, into your blood, into your necks, into the mud, into the depth, until it hugs your souls and suffocates the space that you have left, until it tugs your heartstrings and leaves your molecules caressed. Just a few precious seconds right before eternal rest. Will you fight for your survival from this uninvited guest? Will you Rolodex your history to glamorize regrets or set your sights on new arrival and go sprinting up the steps? Me, I'll revel in the wonder of the colors and the shapes. The way the light resembles floating diamonds dancing on the lake. I am nobody's mistake. But my existence wasn't planned. I had to sneak into the party. They were out of wristbands. Now I'm sinking towards the exit like it's made of quicksand. See, I got used to spinning my wheels but hit the kickstand. I want to truly view the world around me while I still can. I want to worship every flower, giving prayers over the land. I want to open up my eyes so wide that what I see expands. And the beauty beams so bright, it overwhelms woman and man. Fuck a portal to the light. I want to scream. I want to fight. I want to eat and fucking drink. I want to touch. I want to think. I want to feel and taste and see. I want to live. I want to be. And I'd give anything but life because I'm dying to be me. I spent half my life trying to be anything but me. Now my afterlife is spying on my new reality. And I'm vying for another breath before he sets me free. I'm defying death with everything because death's defying me. I will rant, I will rave, I will spit, I will rage. I'll go barefoot on the sun or swim a sea of razor blades. I will grow, I will age, I will slow. I will fade, I'll sleep on hot coals or juggle chainsaws and live grenades. And though I know I'll never give up, in the end I'll give way. Hey, I'm sure there's someone else with something more important to say. But until then, I'm living each and every fucking day. So when I take a breath, I do it like I swear I'm here to stay. Learned fear can be overcome when you realize the voice inside your head is not yours. It's an imitation of the voices from before, repeating on a loop inside your quiet core, receiving since your youth when your choices weren't even yours. Perceiving was the proof, but reality has many doors, so why are we still fighting other people's wars? Learned fear can be overcome when you realize the voice inside your head is not yours. It's an imitation of the voices from before, repeating, repeating, repeating on a loop inside your quiet core. And you can't tell the difference because it sounds the same. But trust me when I tell you, most of what you think is from somebody else's brain. They have us trained, shackled by imaginary chains. Imaginary rules for imaginary games, but they don't know the reasons either. So where should we place the blame? And who is they anyway when we're all the same? Our parents had parents, and their parents had parents. Apparently, it hurts to see, so I'll be transparent. The world is so much bigger than your insecurities. And they don't speak on your behalf without your soul's authority. The world is so much bigger than your culture or community, and they don't speak on your behalf without your soul's authority. Because if it's all a story, then nobody else can tell it for me. Since I'm always transforming, I defy a category. When you do the same thing the same way, it's habit forming. But nothing in this land of mortal man is mandatory. It's all just transitory. Our world's a laboratory. Experimenting on today can change tomorrow morning. And since matter is mostly empty space, we're in a sea of consciousness where the boundaries are erased. So I stared at my reflection until I couldn't see my face. Then I picked myself and put the flowers in an empty vase. If you came for validation, then you're in the wrong place. The only certain satisfaction is becoming what you've chased. And there's no running from the inner voice. So it's important that you choose, but it's more important that you know you have a choice. You have a choice. Are you living someone else's life? You have a voice. Does it haunt you in the dead of night? Would you fly if you weren't convinced to be afraid of heights? And who convinced you anyway? They had no fucking right. Right? No one can dim your light. You shine within so bright that you could blind the sun from sight and scare him back into the night. No one can dim your light. I said it twice because you're greater than the circumstances that surround your perfect life. You're not your nature or your nurture. You're a prototype. And if you hone it right, eventually you'll hack your satellite. A little to the left, a little to the right. At first it's nothing. Then nothing turns into a whisper. Turn the dial and it gets crisper in your transistor. Wait a while and the whisper turns into a scream. It overwhelms your system and you won't know what it means. But pump the volume up and it can tell you all your dreams. Till pretty soon it's the only voice you'll ever need. Now all you have to do is listen when you want to lead. Your fear disintegrates when you decide to stop and breathe. It's your authentic voice. And no matter where you go, it never leaves. And that's God, no matter what religion you believe. I'm starting my own religion. And everyone is welcome, but nobody can join. If you did, you'd miss the point.
Wow. I wish I could be all day here sitting on this chair and listening to you. This is so beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been such a pleasure to sit with you.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
You're so gifted.
Thank you.
It's really amazing.
Well, this is the first home I've ever had for my art. I've literally never, I mean, I've always, you know, I perform around the country and the world. I do workshops for other people to find their voice. But these poetry, you know, pieces that I would create, they've always been living, breathing documents. Mm-hmm. And I would only be able to express them when I showed up. And then I would kind of disappear, you know, and they would even evolve as I would evolve and change as I would change. I would edit them and, you know, I'd cut things out. I'd say, I don't believe in that anymore, you know. And this is the first time I've ever gathered all of my work into one place. So I couldn't be more excited to finally give it away to the world. And we also just finished the audiobook, which I'm so, so excited about.
Thank God. Yeah, yeah, because it's, I mean, funny. I think it's even powerful, of course, when you when you read it. I mean,
yeah.
When is it coming out? Because many people are listening. They're not seeing us. So some are seeing us, some are listening.
Got it.
So I have his book in my hands for everyone who's listening. And it's called Inquire Within. And I have the uncorrected proof in my hands.
It's definitely uncorrected. But I'm trying to let go of being a perfectionist. Yeah, it's perfect.
So, look, I just opened the page with the 85. I just opened it.
That's right.
Amazing. So I love this. I really love this book. I want to have it. So take this with me.
We're 100% going to send you a copy.
Yeah, please. But how, like, when are you going to release the book? When is it coming out?
So people can pre-order it now. Perfect. So as soon as they're listening to this, you can pre-order it or order it.
Awesome.
It actually comes out on March 31st, which is the day before National Poetry Month. Okay. In America, which is really exciting because I'm such a fan of poetry in general, the art form, what I think it can be to popular culture. Mm. And so I'm excited to just be a part of that wave. And they can get the audiobook as well. And the book that you have, it has 60 illustrations. So we work with an amazing illustrator from London named Musta Sharik. And so it allows people to have almost like a philosophical Shel Silverstein experience or something.
I love this. Actually, can I tell you a story about this picture?
Yeah.
It's amazing that I just, this is really amazing that I just opened it. Okay, so like before I was like with my boyfriend, I sometimes had like, I was in relationships that weren't really healthy. And and then one day my mother told me, and that was really profound for me because she said, you actually don't need someone who's going to be with you in the stars. You need someone holding you the stairs so you can be in the stars.
That's crazy.
And I just saw this picture and I was like, whoa.
That's really crazy.
Really crazy.
Wow. This is a piece called When It's Right, and it's about falling in love.
Wow, this is amazing. I love the universe. This is really, because it really touched me, because this always stayed with me. And then I kept actually, then I started to open myself up for a man who is not like me, but someone who would support me being me.
Mm. How did you change that frequency for yourself so that you were open to that in a new way?
Actually, it was just a sentence from my mother.
Mm.
Sometimes you have these click moments, you know, when someone says something to you, and you go like, yeah, you're right.
Mm.
You're right. I was just looking always in the wrong place.
Mm.
And.
Well, first of all, your mother's very wise.
Yes.
You can tell her I said that.
Yeah, I will.
But also, it is an interesting thing. Like, language is only, no matter what language, by the way, it's only just describing reality.
Yeah.
You know, it's these imaginary things that we've all agreed upon that describe reality. And it's weird that someone can say something and it can change your reality.
Yes.
You know? And that's why I think words are so important. It's why I love poetry, but poetry aside, art, just in words, how we talk to other people, how we talk to ourselves. You know, you could say something to someone like your mom did and leave, and let's say you don't have that type of relationship, you never know how you impacted them. Mm-hmm. You never know that something that you said planted a seed in their mind that grew into a forest, you know? So she was able to do that for you in that moment. And then something clicked and here we are.
And language is so powerful. And it was just, that was a crazy moment for me right now because it was exactly the picture I had in my mind.
Mm.
So this drawing is like what I had in my mind. It's
do you want to hear that poem? I feel like maybe I should do that poem.
If you would.
I absolutely will. Because I feel like that's you know, people aren't going to be able to see it, you know, until they get the book.
Yeah, so you should get the book. That was a crazy moment for me right now.
That's so cool.
So this is When It's Right. Falling in love is like finding a home in the heart of a person that you've never known. It's the waiting for the ring of the phone when you're alone, or making them a mixtape of all your favorite songs. Remember how it felt when their touch made you melt, when their presence made you a better version of yourself, when your bed was like an island in the middle of the sea, and their eyes were the only sunset you could see, when their smile was enough to inspire forever in this lifetime of learning how to love each other better. It's beyond words. It's knowing how they take their tea. It is knowing when to challenge her and when to let her be. It is knowing when to hold her and when to set her free. It is chemistry and honesty, empathy, integrity, and humility. It is calling when I'm going to be late or giving her the last bite of cake from my plate. It is going on vacations and walking along the beach. It's the sound that she makes when she laughs in her sleep. It is real, especially when it's hard, because we have chosen to reveal who we really are. Beautiful with all our scars. You're like a sky of stars. I've never felt as infinite as when you're in my arms. I'd never felt as intimate as when I was in your charms. I'd never met someone and instantly knew I belonged. So now the songs on the radio are making more sense. And every rom-com movie seems more intense. I'm having dreams that I'm painting her a picket fence. Our kids are playing on the lawn, still in innocence, picturesque in every sense. It's like a Norman Rockwell. It feels so real. A modern fairy tale with a pool and barbecue grill. We'll have a two-car garage, and every week she'll get a gift certificate for one free foot massage. And when she's had a hard day, we'll go and walk it off. And when she's had a hard night, we'll get some Häagen-Dazs. We'll put our goals on a list and then we'll cross them off. I'll take some pics of our kids, then print them up and make a Mother's Day collage or send her flowers just because her skin is the closest that I've been to God. You see, love is like a long ladder up to heaven. It's like a dance where you move apart and then come back together. It is sunshine and stormy weather. Because you would never know the one unless you knew the other. And in the end, you'll be old and gray with a pair of rocking chairs and some Grand Marnier, grandkids on a grand piano in the foyer, photographs of your family filling the hallway, and everybody in the neighborhood will ask you for advice. So you'll slowly lean in, then you'll look around twice, then you'll whisper real light like it was the secret to your life. When you know, you know. Because when it's right, it's right.
So beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing the,
yeah. That image was...
Yeah. Thank you.
I wanted to make sure I did the poem for you.
Thank you. Yeah. It meant a lot to me. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, I have one last question.
Okay.
And the question is, imagine it's the last day of your life.
Mm.
And you had a beautiful, beautiful life. You wrote so many poems and wrote many books and everything was just perfect. And it's the last day of your life. And I would come to you and I would say, Inkyu, I'm so sorry.
Mm-hmm.
But your books got deleted. Everything
mm-hmm.
is gone.
Mm-hmm.
But I have here a white sheet of paper and a pen.
Mm-hmm.
And if nothing else from you would be remembered in this world, what three wisdoms would you write on this paper?
Let me see. I have a 20-second answer to your question, but I have to look at it because I actually don't have this one memorized.
It's actually amazing how you can memorize all these things.
If this was the last thing that I could leave people with, I would do this. Keep loving through your sadness. Keep loving through your fears. Keep loving through your anger. Keep loving through your tears. Keep loving through your failure. Keep loving through success. Keep loving through anxiety. Keep loving through your stress. Keep loving through rejection. Keep loving through mistrust. Keep loving through your jealousy. Keep loving through your lust. Keep loving through your movement. Keep loving through your breath. Keep loving until loving is the only thing that's left. I'll just say keep loving. We all just have to keep loving each other.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate you having me.
I really just want to say thank you for living what you're here for, because I could really tell that this is what you're here for, to do exactly what you're doing. And I think it's so beautiful, because the way you do it, first of all, you can really tell it comes from the heart, but also I think it really, I mean, my team, we're here just all like heart wide open, I think, right now. And I think it's just really beautiful that you found a way to open hearts in such a special, unique, pure, inspirational way. So I think this is beautiful, and I'm really grateful that I've met you.
Thank you, ditto. I mirror that back to you, because you're literally changing the world. And it's just one person at a time.
Yeah.
And you're doing it. So I acknowledge you. I honor you.
Thank you.
And all of you guys, thank you for taking the time to come hang out with me today.
And when people want to get in touch with you, how do they do that the best? So the book, Inquire Within, they can pre-order it on your website.
Right now they can order it. And if they do order it, like, reach out to me on social media. You can do it on the website, which is in-q.com.
We'll put that in the show notes.
Great. Yeah. And then, you know, just tag me in it. Like, I'm on social media. I'm mostly on like Facebook and Instagram. Mm-hmm. And that's @NQLife. And tag me. Let me know you got the book. Let me know what you think about it. I'm literally the worst person at self-promotion. Mm-hmm. I am horrible at it. I never like to do it. But there's something really beautiful about promoting this book, because I feel like it's now separate from me. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't even have much to do with me anymore. I just want it to have a life of its own. So, you know, as many people that can spread the word as possible, I'll be happy with.
Well, I will read from the poems to my son. Looking forward to it. I think he will love that.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. So, yeah, just thank you so much, everyone. Get the book, Inquire Within. Connect with you on social media. And I'm sure we will meet again.
Absolutely. And, we will, 100%.
Ich hoffe sehr, dass dir diese Folge gefallen hat und dass du ganz viel daraus für dich mitnehmen konntest und dass du gerade auch ganz berührt und beseelt bist. Und wie immer freue ich mich natürlich unendlich, wenn du bei Instagram vorbeischaust, @LauraMarlinaSeiler, mir deine Gedanken zu der Folge dalässt und gerne natürlich auch in Q schreibst auf Instagram und ihm deine Gedanken dalässt zu der Folge. Er freut sich bestimmt auch, von dir zu hören. Und sein Buch ist jetzt, glaube ich, auch in den USA erschienen, das heißt Inquire Within, was du dir auch wahrscheinlich über Amazon, schätze ich mal, bestellen kannst, falls du es gerne haben möchtest. Und ja, ich wünsche dir jetzt einfach einen wunderschönen Tag oder Abend, je nachdem, wie viel Uhr es gerade bei dir ist. Danke, dass es dich gibt. Danke, dass du dir die Zeit nimmst, wenn du das gerne möchtest und dir der Podcast geholfen hat und gefallen hat, mir eine Rezension zu schreiben hier auf iTunes. Und für alle Menschen danke, die mir schon eine Rezension geschrieben haben. Vielen Dank dafür. Und wie gesagt, heute am 22. April erscheint auch die dritte Ausgabe vom IM-Magazin. Erkenne deine Macht, erkenne und nutze deine Macht. Also fühl dich von Herzen umarmt, ganz, ganz große Umarmung. Es ist so schön, dass es dich gibt. Pass auf dich auf. Rock on und Namaste, deine Laura.